Welcome. We're glad you've joined us for this Hand in Hand podcast. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we provide information, classes, training, and lots of support for parents like you. We call our approach Parenting by Connection, and it's based on the insight that you deserve good support as you parent, and every child needs lots of connection in order to thrive. We offer tools to help you foster support for yourself and connection in your family. We hope this podcast gives you exactly the kind of support you're looking for.
Welcome, everyone. Laura, do you want to go ahead and start?
Sure, yes. Start. Hello, everyone. We're so happy you're here. Welcome to all of you. We know your time is precious, and we know how challenging parenting and teaching can be. So thank you for taking time out of your busy day and life to join us for this teleseminar. We'd like to support your work in parenting and teaching, and we hope to give you some ideas today that you can use at home with your family or in your classroom. There are over 116 parents registered for today's call, parents and teachers. And I don't want to start without everyone here, so I'm just going to talk for a few minutes about Hand in Hand while everyone is joining in. And then after that, we'll begin our teleseminar on the topic of separation anxiety in the childcare setting. My name is Laura Minigrode, and my co-presenter is Shelley Macy. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization based in California with instructors all over the world, including myself and my co-presenter, Shelley. Hand in Hand was founded about 30 years ago by Patty Whipler, who has wonderful insights about the emotional needs of children based on many years of real life experience. Hand in Hand brings parents information, tools, and lots of support for their vital work of parenting. We know the work of nurturing children cannot be easily done in isolation. Hand in Hand has a variety of offerings designed to support you as a parent or a teacher, free articles on the website, free teleseminars like this one, a free online discussion group, actually several, and free access to an inspiring blog with many success stories based on this approach. Besides the free resources, there are also podcasts, classes, support groups, both in person and online. There are intensive trainings for parents and for professionals who work with children, consultations for one-on-one support. You can find all the resources through the Hand in Hand website. There are four main ideas behind the Hand in Hand approach. The first is that we parents need and deserve support for our emotional challenge, for the emotional challenge of parenting. We can build that support and have much more success meeting both our own needs and our children's needs. The second is our children are born to feel connected with us. This sense of connection is what they need in order to learn, to build friendships, and to build resilience and confidence as they grow. The third main idea is that when children don't feel connected, their behavior goes off track and they signal to us for help. And the fourth idea is that when we foster laughter and play without tickling and set limits without harshness and support children to have good, hearty cries and tantrums, it helps our children to feel more fully connected to us and helps them leave difficult behaviors behind. Hand in Hand helps parents strengthen and rebuild the parent-child connection so we can feel successful as we love our children and so our children can thrive on the love we have for them. I'm just going to take a minute to introduce myself, too. And I just want to emphasize again that Hand in Hand is offers amazing tools for parents but also has a really long history of being used in childcare settings and with by teachers. So our focus, it sounds a lot like the focus sounds very on parenting, but it also includes the tools are universal and can be used in the childcare setting with a lot of success. So with that said, I'm going to introduce myself. I'm Laura Minogrode, and I am an early childhood teacher. I work with the Austin Community College Children's Lab School in Austin, Texas, and I'm also a parent of three children who are 15, 13, and 11. Almost forgot about that. And they are all, they all have had been the recipients of Hand in Hand's tools, connection tools, and they've helped me learn and grow a lot. And my interest in this topic really comes from having used Hand in Hand tools to help children with separation and seeing just an amazing lightness and freedom and ability to start learning and feeling connected after being listened to. So that's why I love this topic so much, and I'm really happy to be here with you tonight to talk about it. And now I'm very pleased to introduce Shelley Macy, who is going to introduce herself and tell us a little bit more about her topic.
Thanks, Laura. So I worked for 12 years as an early childhood teacher with children, infants through preschool, mostly with preschoolers. First as a Montessori teacher, and then I had my own family child care home for a year. And then I worked for several years in a nonprofit daycare center, first as a teacher's aide, and then as a teacher, and then as an education coordinator. And then after my children were born and my daughter was three, we started Parent Co-op Preschool together. I was a teacher and went through her few years past kindergarten. I started doing kindergarten enrichment along with the preschool. And then in 1989, which is actually when Patty also started Hand in Hand, coincidentally, I was hired as an early childhood instructor for Northwest Indian College, which is a tribal college in Northwest Washington State. And as one of two early childhood instructors, and then when that grant ran out, I was the, for most of the 27 following years, I was the early childhood instructor, and I worked as a parenting instructor and even directed the child care for the college for about a year. And now I'm happily mostly retired, and I'm getting to spend more time directly with Hand in Hand, although I have used Hand in Hand materials in my college courses and actually teach the starter class, the fundamentals of Hand in Hand, as one of the courses that's required in a degree program. And became a certified instructor. I love the sequence and the spoken sequence of the Hand in Hand starter class. So I became a certified instructor about seven or eight years ago. So Laura, was there more that you were going to say about brain science?
Yeah, and I also would love just to do a show of hands. So in our, we wanted to find out just a little bit more about who is in the audience or who's on the call with us. And there's this neat thing with the teleseminar that we're using where you can raise your hand by pressing star 2 on your phone. And so we're going to do a little show of hands. So on your phone keypad, if you are a child care provider, teacher, administrator, working in a child care setting or a nanny, any of those things, can you raise your hand by pressing star 2, please? Great. Thank you.
Cool. It worked.
Yeah, it's so neat. I love it. Thank you. So now if you are a parent who is interested in this topic because of your own experience, can you press star 2? Great. Wonderful. Okay. Thank you so much. Well, we hope to be able to address this topic from both, every possible angle. And I appreciate knowing a little bit more about who's here. And, so thank you. And we'll definitely have time at the end for questions and can address everything. Hopefully we will be able to do that. So I'm going to say just a little bit more about brain science. And as we, in the introduction to the teleseminar, we talked about the importance of connection and how when a child is connected to a caring adult in their life, that it's so meaningful. They're able to learn. They're able to behave well, and everything just feels connected and easy. And there's a little bit of science behind that that I just want to share. I'm going to give a very, quick overview of that. The idea behind this is that love and attention have the power to build a child's intelligence, and that is because of the part of our brain called the limbic system, which is wired to engage a child and an adult in communication. And this is kind of an inborn attention detection system that everyone has. And we're looking for safety. We're looking for connection with another person. And when your child is connected to you, sometimes it's not even through words. It's eyes, eye contact, tone of voice, facial expression. There's a lot of ways that children can find safety and feel connected. And when they are safe that way, they're able to learn. And at the same time, when that connection is broken, the limbic system might signal that they need to be on high alert. And the part of their brain that has sort of a fight or flight response takes over. And that's when thinking is not happening. And a lot of times that leads to off-track behavior. So I think I will hand it to Shelley, and she will talk a little bit more about what's happening with separation anxiety.
Okay. Thanks, Laura.
Thank you.
All right. So as Laura was just saying so clearly, a sense of connection is absolutely necessary for children to thrive. And certainly in childcare settings, that sense of connection is what we as early childhood providers, we know this. We're reaching all the time for ways to connect and help children feel connected to us and to the other kids and the other caregivers. And but along with this very important sense of connection is a real vulnerability to that sense of connection being broken. And it actually is kind of easily broken. Because it's like it's so important that it exists that when it, in order actually for infants to survive from the beginning, they have to be connected to someone who's going to take care of them because they can't survive without someone to care for them. That sense of connection is easily broken and sort of sets an alarm off that, oh my gosh, something might not be right. Well, we see this in childcare settings. I'm sure you can think of lots of examples, but one real simple one is that for an infant or a toddler, you're changing their diaper and you're talking with them and you've got this real special one-on-one connection going on, and then you set them down on the rug to go wash your hands and you just turn to wash your hands and they'll burst into tears. They're just, oh my gosh, it feels like I'm all alone again. Or for older kids, maybe their favorite teacher goes to the kitchen to get the afternoon snack and it's like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And you'll see their behavior start to flare because their special teacher's not there. Well, because of this vulnerability to feeling disconnected, every child has experienced some sad feelings about separation by the time they get to you as a child care provider. It can't be helped. I think life would be boring if things were always just completely smooth. And, lots of things do happen. So that even if they arrive at your center or if you become a nanny for them and they're just 6 weeks old, which is in Washington State when they can be in childcare, they come with their vulnerability to being disconnected and sad feelings already in place. So when we think about children feeling upset by separation in early learning centers or with a caregiver, there are two kinds of causes
The first is the current separation. The parent is dropping them off with you, and they're separating from their parent. Or they come into school, and their caregiver is homesick, and there's a substitute caregiver. There's a sense that disconnection is happening right now. The other kind is when a small hint of separation kicks up stored feelings of separation from an earlier time. And like when, I would go in to visit the center, sometimes I'd go in and give something to one of my students who was in infant room, walk in, smile, say hello, hand the student something, say goodbye and walk out, and an infant would burst into tears, and they didn't even know me. But it's that feeling, that old feeling that surfaces once there's something happening in the present that'll kick up the stored feeling. So at those times, you're there, but the child is flooded with feelings that she's alone. And just a note, Laura mentioned this, that unresolved fears and stored feelings are often at the root of difficult behaviors, and that's certainly quite true about feelings of separation. So a child loaded with feelings about separation who hasn't been able to shed them through emotional release, like crying or trembling or tantruming, can't sense that he's safe, can't think. So he sends off signals that he's feeling disconnected through unthinking off-track behavior, like biting or kicking or hurting or forcefully hugging someone. Other signals of disconnection is withdrawal, like sucking hard on the binky and not really engaging, or thumb sucking, or hiding in the cubby, or telling someone else, you can't play. No, you can't play. That's another indication that they're feeling disconnected. Another signal is being unable to settle on an activity or not paying attention to an activity that they're doing, whining, balking, being picky about everything, or not being able to be, having to have a special blankie or a special stuffed animal or something they have to have in order to keep from being upset and for order for the day to go on. These are all signals children give that say, gee, I'm not feeling connected. Gee, I'm not feeling connected. So helping children work through and shed their feelings about separation, both the current separation and stored feelings from earlier separations, can have real benefits, not just at drop-off time, but throughout their day. And what children need in order to shed those feelings is to cry fully and feel the frightened feelings about separation, either the one that's about to happen or that's already happening. While they cry, they need the love and caring of someone who offers them warmth and safety. So this may seem odd because the conventional wisdom is that when a parent comes to drop their child off, we want them to leave immediately or somehow minimize the crying and the upset. And I was expert before I learned about this at distracting children and helping them not to cry. With infants, I could pat them and shake them and jiggle them and shake little toys in front of them and get them distracted pretty quickly. But I didn't get to do that much. Mostly I worked with toddlers and preschoolers, and with them, I could get them involved in the morning's activities. I knew who their best friends were and get them to play with their best friend or offer to read them a story till they could pull their attention out to do something else. But then there was those children who wanted me to sit the entire day because otherwise they'd be upset. And then there's patting them and saying, it's okay. You need to stop now. Or just ignore them if they won't quit. However, this hand-in-hand approach really is a new paradigm. Over and over, in hundreds of situations of my own that I've had experience with, and thousands of situations of hand-in-hand collectively, we've seen that children's big, noisy, messy feelings, when they're listened to, become more confident, more cooperative, and resilient. They feel closer to the caregiver who listened to them while they cried. They feel closer to their parents because they don't feel abandoned anymore. And they stop the off-track behaviors that were spoiling their relationships, and self-regulation blossom. Okay, so how do you do this? How does it work really? I'm going to share some of this. You will come up with your own ways of how it works for you and children. But here are just sort of general guidelines that will give you a sense of how to help children actually heal the feelings they have so they don't linger to resurface daily or drive their behavior off track. And the key is connection. It's always connection. So if you can talk to parents before they enroll their child, there's a lot you can do up ahead of time. And if your administrator is on board with this, it can really help. You can let the parent know that you will pay attention to the child and that their tears and upset don't upset you, that you are prepared to listen. You can let them know that they are welcome to stay as long as they want, to play with their child a bit. And you can let them know that your policy is that they should never sneak out without saying goodbye. It's much easier on a child because you can explain that when they sneak out, then the child feels less connected and less safe. Because if this is a place where a parent can disappear, this is not a place where you would want to be. And you want them to feel secure in your program. The other thing that you can do, and that I did, was to ask them to look pleased with their child, with the daycare, and with you when they leave, especially if the child's upset, and let them know they'll come back. I always come back. Then I have offered people this, one of the articles from the website from Hand in Hand, Separation Anxiety Recovery or other articles to help them see that, yes, we know how to listen, and listening helps. If you don't get to them beforehand, this is the child that you're working with right now, then you can kind of go back and have conversations. But for everyone, actual drop-off, morning greeting, of course. You welcome the parent warmly and the child, and you try not to rush. Try to be right there. And the warmth between you and the parent makes a big deal to the child. They feel connected to you if you feel connected to their parent. I'm sure you've experienced that. So building that relationship with the parent is really important. And when the parent leaves, and sometimes parents stay and they're very, very anxious, if you can reassure them that things will be fine, the more that parents are confident things are fine, the better things go. And if the child starts to cry, that's fine. Those of you who are parents and are thinking about how you hand your child over, again, I want to recommend some of the article called Separation Anxiety Recovery as a way to think about how you can leave your child. But leaving, being confident, and when their tears start to know that what they're saying is, I feel safe now. I'm with my mom and my caregiver. I can begin to release these feelings, and it's a good thing. And if you as a parent can say, I'll be back, I love you, teacher will take care of you, and say goodbye, then they get to keep crying with someone who is holding them close and caring. Now, for you who are holding the child, if you can be present for a long and tearful goodbye, that'd be great. You offer your warmth and support as a child cries, trembles, perspires, maybe struggles. Some children get very, very sweaty, and it's not a bad thing. This is the process of showing feelings fully that is natural, healthy, and deeply beneficial to the child because you are listening. We give this listening tool a name. We call it stay listening, which is really helpful because sometimes people think you're not doing anything. Shouldn't you be calming this child down? Shouldn't you be stopping them from crying?
if you can alert people to what you're doing, that's helpful. But sometimes you can't. So you need to have, it's nice to have a word. Say, I'm stay listening right now. Everything is fine. And if you look confident, it helps. This is a key listening tool. And we use it till the child is finished or as long as we can. So till they're finished could be 30 to 60 minutes. As long as we can might be 5. But you stay close, not too close. Eye contact available to the child. So if he burrows in, you gently move him just a little bit at a time so he could see you if he looked. What will happen if he looks and sees your eyes looking loving, warm, and unworried, you know, no furrowed brow, if you can do that, he will see that you're okay and that he can now keep crying. It's different than saying, it's okay. Instead, you want to say things that will help him to relax and know that you're okay. Sometimes I tell parents, snot is fine with me. Crying is fine. Snot is fine. It's a fast way for children to heal and regain confidence at all as well. For some children, it may be several days at a time, over a week or two, before they've released as many of the feelings as they can with you, and it will make this big difference for them. Other children, it's a day or two. Now, in thinking about the kinds of things you want to say, you don't want to talk a whole lot, because what you want is confidence that they're fine. So the kinds of things that I like to say is, Daddy will be back this afternoon. Or, if it's Mommy, Mommy always comes back. Pause. I'll take care of you till she comes. Or, if it's, I've got the morning shift and my coworker has the evening shift and they'll be picked up, I'll say, we'll take care of you. We'll take care of you. Pause. When you feel better, we can play. Pause. All of this is a way of letting a child know that everything is fine and that you're trusting the process. Now, sometimes they say and do things, the children who are verbal, that make it sound like they don't like you. I had a child once who said, you have BO or bad breath. And they were crying and crying and they would just say something mean to me. And my job was to say, I still care about you and I will take care of you. What they're doing is showing you where their bad feelings, and it isn't personal, and they don't mean it, and they're not going to be able to figure out what you're talking about if you say, well, now that isn't polite. Their mind isn't working in that way right now. What they're trying to do is clear their mind of all those, of the fear and the grief that they had when they, at another time, when they couldn't tell anyone was there, and they couldn't tell anyone how scared they were. So they're pinning old feelings on you in order to shed them, and if they won't be doing that when they're done. they're telling you that they count on you, that they feel safe enough to show you their toughest battles and their most vulnerable places, and that you can actually be there and listen. So the more they cry, the more they heal, and that for that reason, you wouldn't want to belittle them in any way, of course, and not belittle their feelings and assume that their mind is doing what it needs to do. There's a popular idea nowadays that children need us to name their feelings, or they need to name their feelings. And that turns out to not be helpful, that it actually distracts them from doing the healing work. So you don't have to name it. In fact, it helps if you don't. Because if you say, gee, you're mad, and if you really feel it's sad, then they're like, ah, this lady doesn't get me, or this man is off his rocker. Instead, you let them have their feelings. And the limbic system, the limbic brain, instinctually knows that shedding the feelings is needed. And that it is very intelligent of a child to emotionally unload the roadblocks to their confidence and their thinking by unloading their fears. So every single tear helps. And Some days they cry over and over. One day, the next day, it seems to be the same each day. But if you watch, you'll start seeing changes in behavior. So even though the cries look the same, sound the same, act the same, they're not really crying the same thing. Each day, they're cleaning up a new pot, but it looks the same as it gets cleaned up. However, okay, that's all well and good, and it's very important, and it's very precious, and it's a wonderful process. The thing is that for us as adults, we struggle when we listen to children cry. Nobody listened to us quite this way, and it can be this alarm will go off in people's minds. So, and in our own uncertainty, you know, is this right? Am I holding them close enough? Am I too close? Do I need to let them be a little more distant? You know, we're always the whole time trying to think about what is the best way to build connection with this child as they release all the hurt feelings of feeling disconnected from separation. One of the really important tools that the Hand in Hand has been so smart about developing and sharing is to do something we call a listening partnership. And it's very straightforward. It's very, in a way, it's very simple, but it's so profound. And that is to have a friend or a coworker, someone who will keep confidentiality, to listen to you and your feelings. Better yet, if you make it an even trade, agree that, hey, we have 10 minutes, will you listen to me for 5? And then I'll listen to you for 5. Works great if two of you have a break at the same time in the child care center, which may never happen. That depends on how big a center you're in. Or might be after work when you have 40 minutes or an hour and you can take trade 20 or 30 each. Agree that you'll listen and give each person a chance to talk about whatever's on their mind. And if it's about listening to children cry, you'll probably notice that you have your own feelings surface. And it's helpful to talk about what do you feel when a child is showing deep feeling? What part of your childhood does this remind of? What do you feel when a child is acting like they don't want you? You know, I want my mom, I want my mom. There are all kinds of things that come up for us and that the feelings that we could talk about them, if we could even cry about them or be irritated out of the range of the children so that we can do our own emotional work. It makes it so much easier for us to listen to children. It allows us to sort out our own feelings about children's emotions, about separation, about our own fears and grief or anger. And those interfering feelings will actually decrease if we can be listened to, and we can be more confident, more flexible when we're helping with a crying child or a concerned parent. Okay. Now, if a parent could stay and say goodbye repeatedly and you could have time to spend 30 minutes to an hour, like if it was the beginning of the day and it was the only child there, it's sort of this golden opportunity. Great. And I point you again to the separation anxiety articles in the website. And parents, those of you on the call, you might really want to check those out. But I want to say one more thing to child care providers, that it might be easier to strategize with your coworkers about when to offer stay listening to a particular child at other times of the day. So if you notice this child is always upset at a particular time, when my favorite caregiver is on a break, when it's nap time, when it's a transition to going outside, you can plan ahead to have a stay listening that'll work really well in your setting with the child and the adult. So you could, let's say it's about you going on your break and little Susie always cries when you go on your break. You could set it up so you say it's break time, even if it's not. It's this time when there's hardly any kids or there's plenty of staff and the kids are really involved in other stuff. And you could say, I'm going on my break now.
and little Susie could start to cry, and you could actually stay by her and tell her, I am going on a break now. I'll be going now. And just inch away, and she cries, and then if it's crying slows down, you can inch away a little bit more, and she'll cry again, and you're paying warm attention. This is not manipulating. This is giving her the room to feel the feelings as big as they are before you actually leave, while you're still connected, because you want the tears to be able to be released, and so they no longer are burdened by them. I'm going to need to stop because I want to make sure we have time for questions and also for some stories that Laura and I can share about how we've used this tool of stay listening with children. There are also the hand-in-hand, we have four listening tools with children, very straightforward, stay listening, this one. Play listening is a wonderful way for children to work on separation fears using laughter, and I want to point you toward that as well. Setting limits with stay listening really is also as the third tool, and finally special time, which is a wonderful way to build connection so that they can more easily release the feelings at another time. We teach these in our starter classes and our professionals intensive. In fact, we're going to have a professionals intensive for early childhood folks. And there are free articles and Patty's new book, which I know Laura's going to mention, called Listen, which has a wealth of information. But for now, Laura and I would like to share a story or two. And Laura, I'd love for you to go first because I've been talking for so much.
Sure. Wonderful. Thank you so much. You are such a incredible resource. That was amazing. Thank you.
Okay.
I have one of my most, something that stuck with me so much in years of teaching is a story about a little boy named Abe who I worked with who was one of the oldest, this was in a 2-year-old classroom. And at the beginning of the year, when we met Abe, he was super excited to come to school and friendly and just really, really happy to be in school. And then when his dad left, he figured out that, wait a minute, this isn't everything I thought it was. Something's not quite working for me with this. So he would, a lot of times he had a lot of feelings and he was doing a lot of crying and also saying, you know, he was saying, my daddy at home, my daddy at home. And he wanted his dad and he had some really strong feelings about it. And in this particular school, my co-teacher really appreciated me being able to listen to Abe in a different setting. It was, that was the way we worked it out. So I would actually sit with him, outside and in beautiful Austin, Texas. We can go outside and, we would kind of just do some walking around the playground and he would share some of his anxiety and fear. And a lot of times it would go on for half an hour or so. And it was pretty intense. It was actually really a lot of feelings and a lot of crying. And I tried to comfort him and let him know I was there for him and just listen and just make a lot of eye contact and a lot of being close but not holding him and not comforting him, just sitting with him. And this was, it seemed like a lot of crying, and sometimes it seemed like more than could be possible, but on, you know, day 4, he just stopped and he looked at me and he smiled and we went back inside and I hate to present it like there was something that, you know, that there's a magic switch, but it literally felt like, you know, the clouds parted and the sun broke through and that little boy was the happiest kid the rest of the year. And then, you know, there's probably more to the story, but that was an amazing, for me, there was a huge feeling of You know, he needed to be heard. He needed those feelings to be expressed, and he needed someone there with him. And then knowing that there was someone there making it safe for him to have feelings, he was able to learn. And the rest of the year, he was the first one in line, the first one to do, you know, anything that we said, he was just right there. And he was right, able to participate so fully. And, it's one of the most powerful stories from my using hand in hand in the classroom, because, it was just, you know, like, hang in there, hang on just a little longer with the listening. And then, so it made a big difference. And he's,
that's a wonderful, wonderful story. Mm-hmm. I'd like to share a story, a preschool story. This was a little boy named Daniel. He and his mom, it was a parent co-op preschool, and they started mid-year. And she came to the preschool because she'd heard it was good, which was really nice. So I already had this feeling of, okay, she'll listen to me. When she told me that he was going to have trouble with separation. He was a large four-year-old. People expected him to be older than he was, and he was just this dear little boy who had very big feelings about his mom leaving. So what I said to her was, I am really fine with him crying. I like to be with children when they cry, and I will stay with him. What I need from you, that's what I said earlier, what I need from you is for you to look pleased with Daniel and look pleased with me as you go. And I'll bring him over to the window. He can wave goodbye. And if you'll just wave, you know, turn around and look. Don't walk away as if you don't know he's there, because we're going to be there. And wave as you go. It'll really help. So she did this. She'd bring him in. He would burst into tears. He would be crying and clinging. And then he would be crying really hard as she left. And she would say, bye, sweetheart. I'll be back. And I would say, I'll take care of you, Daniel. Would you like to go wave at mommy when she at the window? And he'd nod his head, not streaming and got tears streaming. We'd go to the window and climb up on the stool just for that. And he'd wave, and his mom would turn around and wave. She'd get in the car and wave as they drove off, looking pleased, not looking all bright and shiny. She had to kind of work at it to look pleased, but bright and shiny would have been fine. Then he would cry for maybe 5 or 10 minutes. He'd cry really, really hard, and then he would be done and wipe up the tears. And he was kind of subdued during the day, the first day. It was only 2 mornings a week, so it was kind of drug things out. But it was like, it took 3 weeks, each morning crying, and it was always about the same amount of crying. It looked and sounded exactly the same. But each day, he would be a little lighter, try more things, spend more time away from me. So after 3 weeks, which was 2, 4, 6 times, he was smiling and waving goodbye to his mom and just completely okay. It was just lovely.
Yeah.
And, of course, I have tons of stories about infants, but I see there's someone with their hand up. Maybe we could hear a question. Oh, and we did have a question emailed in as well that I want to address about a parent asking about a nanny. But,
yeah.
Let's see. I'll let you do the computer. You can unmute David. Laura.
Oh, I don't see it. Okay, I will. So would you like us to start answering questions? And I didn't see a hand, but...
Okay. I see... Let's see.
Hello?
Hi. Someone from California. Do you have a question?
Hi, this is Gabby. Yes, I'm from California. Thank you so much for this call. That's been great. I have a small family daycare in my house, and I'm very familiar with Handy Hands. I have been using it with my son since he's 1 year old. He's 6 now. And I always have been trying and using as the best of my ability, you know, all the tools with the kids in my daycare. But because I have a small daycare that's for 6 kids, I don't need to have an assistant all the time with me. And so my question is, Do you have any information that you could share with me, any things that's working, how to listen to the kids while you are by yourself? Because I can easily see how, you know, leaving and excusing yourself and being able to do the one-on-one with the children. But I do. I stay listening with one kid while the other ones are around. And, you know, in different groups in the last 6 years, I had kids saying to each other, they're having feelings or he's having his feeling and, you know, just respecting it. But yeah, in this group that I have right now, they're smaller and younger. And what happens, like, they get really triggered by the other kids, the kid that's crying. And I don't have somebody else to leave with me, to stay with them so I can leave. So when I'm by myself, it's being harder to do the job that I know it works. Yeah. So thank you so much. And just to see if you have anything that you could brighten my day with some information.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Gabby. Do you want me to take this one, Laura?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. My hands are up to you about what doing family daycare and having several children and you're the only one. And I have a few thoughts. One is that when you say that they're triggered, do they mean they all start crying or their behavior starts to go off track? They start crying.
Both things, but more like they get annoyed, irritated by that crying that's non-stopping. So they can act out different ways, or the little ones,
right,
the smaller ones might start crying too, or they just come and cling on me because they also want to, like, what's going on? Should we all be crying right now?
Yes. Okay. Well, to me, crying, like, see, it actually, in a way, they're saying, oh, it's safe to cry here.
Mm.
I can cry too. So as that, having a child, having several children crying at once while they're close to you or hanging on you is, I think you can just, if you can tell yourself, wow, look at all this good work that's happening, and appreciate that they are saying this is a safe place. It's kind of like when one person in a crowd yawns and then everybody starts yawning. There's some way that our limbic systems go, oh, what a relief, and all start crying. Then other kinds of things, like, of course, it's what you do to set up your environment so they can be involved. But I think the other piece is to get those listening partners. Is there someone you do a listening partnership with yet?
Yes, I have.
Great. To use those listening partnerships for what surfaces for you when they're all crying at once.
Right.
So those are a couple thoughts. And the third is, I mentioned special time, but if you can even do 2 minutes of special time with each child, or if there's a time, they're the first child that gets there and the last child that leaves, and they start getting to see special time as something that it's a tool to work into your day at odd moments. It will also, it will help build the connection so the behavior doesn't go off track as easily. But it definitely is an art, and I appreciate what you're doing, Gabby.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your thoughts.
You're welcome.
So it looks like there's another question. It doesn't have a city, but I think the number ends in 585.
There we go.
Yes, that's me.
Hi.
Hi. I'm in Byron Bay, Australia. And thank you for your question, Gabby. I'm also in family daycare. I'm doing it with a friend. We've just started, and I've been using the Hand in Hand tools with my children for quite a while, but I guess my big question is about information for parents. I know there's an amazing resource, and, you know, there's the Listen book and there's the articles and there's all of that. But I guess my question, I was thinking of writing out something with my colleague just to, you know, just so that the parents are informed. We've asked all of them if they know about Hand in Hand, and everyone does. So
but it doesn't actually mean in practice, like we've had quite a bit of, with the separation, we've only started last week with, you know, kids having their big feelings and parents kind of not really sure. And I'm really concerned that, you know, because it's not the normal paradigm, that even though they may have heard, I just want to give them a piece of paper and not necessarily just say, I'll go and look at the website, because they might not do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to, you know, I just want them to be empowered and informed and, yeah, because, yeah, I guess I'm just concerned that it could come back in a, you know, in a not very good way if they just aren't really fully aware of what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
So any thoughts about that?
Laura, do you want to take that?
Sure. I think that's a really good question. Thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, again, for all the work that you do. Like, it's just, yeah, thank you. As I hear how thoughtful these questions are, I really appreciate it. It's a big job. So there are a couple of really amazing resources on handinhandparenting.org. And I know what you mean about not, you know, sending a person to a website. Sometimes it's overwhelming and you'd like to have something really, just a quick, you know, something that'll be really easy to grasp. And, that there is one particular thing called the step-by-step guide to separation anxiety recovery. And it's a PDF that, I think you should be able to find it really easily. There might be a thing where you have to enter your email address and then it comes to you that way. But it's so well, it states everything so clearly. And if you get a copy of it and you make copies and give it to the parents, that could be such a just a really helpful resource for them to start with.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, you great. Know, I think that sometimes when you hear something about hand in hand, it takes a few times to hear, to complete. I find in the classes that I teach, a lot of times people have to hear it and then try it and then hear it again. And so sometimes it just, you know, being the person who can remind them and be there to model it will really help a lot. It will really help them.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, great. Because, yeah, at the moment I just think, oh, wow, there's a lot of trust involved with us kind of telling them what it is and doing it with their children. And, yeah, I just want them to be, yeah, to really understand what we're doing. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for this great call. I'll go now. So thank you. I'll keep listening, but I'll mute myself.
Thank you.
We have time, I think, for one more question.
Yeah, there's someone from Van Nuys, California. I'm going to unmute. Hi. Do you have a question?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. Great. Hi, my name is Dina. Thank you for taking the time and doing this talk. So I'm a parent, and I spend about 3/4 of my time with my daughter. I work about 12 to 15 hours a week, and she spends maybe one of the 3 days with my husband, and then two of the other days is with a babysitter. And she's 22 months, and she just only really started staying with my husband without crying initially when I left in the last month or two, and they're incredibly close. He works from home. We both really utilize these methods. I mean, I'm a psychologist. Like, I do everything I can to really make sure she's securely connected and super patient with her. I use Janet Lansbury and hand-in-hand parenting, but more heavy on the hand-in-hand parenting techniques. And she still gets, like, pretty hysterical when I leave and the babysitter is here. And my husband's home, so we know the babysitter's not doing it. She's the sweetest young girl who's very personable and so warm and kind and patient with my daughter. And so I just don't know if this is just like who she is, or if I'm missing something or reacting or just doing something to contribute to her separation anxiety.
I think, Dana, that you have you've got sort of a perfect storm, but that sounds like a disaster happening. And actually, this is sort of a perfect opportunity. Absolutely beautiful. And so your daughter's really, she's like, okay, I've got my mom here. I've got my dad in the next room, and I've got this sweet person who is just who is so open to me. I could offload this whole bucket load today. And here, so she's being very smart, and you're there. So what we recommend when a parent is on board with Hand in Hand, and the caregiver can be, you can give her all this information, you can hand out the PDF Laura was saying, is that you can plan to pay her to come an hour earlier, half an hour earlier, 15 minutes, whatever you can do. Pay her to come early, and you start saying goodbye half an hour before it's time to go.
So I have her come 2 hours before I leave.
What's that?
I want to ease her in, but maybe it's too much. I have her come 2 hours before I leave.
Oh, okay, yeah. So start saying goodbye, and in a way that you are actually leaving. So you're saying, okay, I've got it's half an hour, and I don't have to leave for half an hour. Say, I'm going now. You get your coat on, whatever things you carry with you that you always get. So you look like you're leaving. But
she knows,
what you're doing.
She says, mommy, work. You know, she knows.
Yeah. And then as she starts to cry, you're right there. Her caregiver is right there. And you look in her eyes, and you keep her from burrowing in. You hold her where she can see you and say, yeah, mommy's leaving. You know, whatever your caregiver's doing, Susie's going to take care of you. Susie's my little sister. That's why I keep using that word. Susie will take care of you. You're both warmly looking at her, and she cries and cries and cries. And then she sort of stops crying, and then you move a little bit away, or you start to move her towards Susie a little more, and the crying re-intensifies.
Of course.
And so as the crying dies down, then you sort of take the next step like you're going. And this will give her a chance to unload huge amounts of feelings that she's attaching to the separation time.
Mm-hmm.
And so to the extent you can do that, she'll unleash a lot of stuff, and it's just a lovely opportunity. And I do recommend the article to kind of give yourself the courage to do it. It also helps
the step-by-step guide.
That one, or Separation Anxiety Recovery, or I think there's a group of 3 or 4 articles and a little audio with Patty that
okay.
Great. I wish I knew what it was called.
So you're saying just like let it be prolonged. Let her have all of her feelings until she's done. As always. But I guess I was unsure with the caregiver, because we left her one time in the evening, and I've always put her down, or my husband, or my mom, other than that, no one else has ever put her down and at night. And it was she just seemed so, I went back, and maybe that was my mistake, but she just seemed so traumatized by it. So now I'm like a little hesitant
to do that. If she was traumatized, but that's old, and now if she has you right there and this lovely person and her daddy, she'll be able to release the old trauma along with the feelings right now. And we have to stop, I'm sorry to say, so I'm going to.
That's okay. That's
cut you off.
That's all I need.
But we're going to do it. Thank you so much. I'm going to just say one more thing, and then Laura is going to close. And that is that we got a question from a parent about starting a child with a nanny for the first time. And so I'm happy to say that our advice would be very similar, and hope that you can access the information on further information on the website to, give you courage, and then to remember to set up a listening partnership for yourself, maybe right after that big cry. because that's when there will probably be big feelings up for you. Thanks. Okay, Laura, I'll stop talking.
Okay, well, thank you so much, everybody. Amazing questions, and thank you for the work, again, that you're doing, and thank you for your time tonight. Thank you, Shelley, for sharing all your amazing resources, and I just hope everyone is able to make use of some stay listening tools, and thank you very much. So in closing, I want to just make sure that you know that Hands in Hand offers a number of resources. We offer free resources, including articles, podcasts, membership to a free Yahoo group, Facebook support groups, and access to the blog. We offer one-on-one consultations with some amazing experienced instructors. We have self-guided classes with topics ranging from helping children with aggression to sleep and sibling rivalry. The classes are self-guided, which means you'll be watching videos and reading booklets on your own. It's a really amazing way to learn. And the course also comes with an optional opportunity to consult with someone. And we have the instructor-led six-week starter classes, which is a great, wonderful introduction. This is the best way to learn about the approach in a supportive environment and with a few other parents. And then we offer a professional intensive training in hand-in-hand parenting. This course will help you bring the tools into the work you're already doing with children and families. If in case anyone who's listening is in the Austin, Texas area, I do have an upcoming starter class in person, which is also great. And it will start in January. And it will be listed on the hand-in-hand parenting site and also in my Facebook group, which is called Parenting by Connection with Laura Minigrode. So I hope you find me on Facebook, and I hope some Austin people will come to my class. And Shelley, you have some upcoming events?
Yes, I'm going to be teaching the Professionals Intensive starting in January, January 22nd, and it's on Sunday evenings here in the United States, 6 p.m. Pacific time. And it's an 8-week class, and it includes the starter class information and additional work for people working with young children and families. And I'm especially hopeful that there will be early childhood folks on that call, and we'll be sort of gearing things to us.
Hmm. Wonderful. Well, thank you, everybody, again, so much for joining us, and I hope you have a lovely day or evening, depending on where you are, and please stay in touch. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us. Hand in Hand is here to help you get the support you need for your work as a parent. To download podcasts on additional parenting topics, go to handinhandparenting.org/store. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.